Steve Gruber Show. Listen, you can always find out more at stevegruber.com. Follow us online there, please. Roe v. Wade, and there are six cases left, and we're going to dig a little bit into that in a moment here. Professor William Wagner is here. He's a former federal judge, former federal prosecutor. He knows his way around a courtroom. He's been involved with numerous cases at the Supreme Court. Professor, thank you for being here.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be back again.
Good to have you here, of course. All right, so first of all, your reaction, I know we've talked a bit about this case. Is it unusual? Because to me it seems unusual, because it's not just the Roe v. Wade case, it's the Second Amendment case. It is the main case allowing money to follow the student even to a private religious school in a schools of choice case. You say there's a shift going on in philosophy, or it's already happened, of the Supreme Court, which is what's making heads on the left explode, that's for sure. What is this shift in philosophy?
That's correct. And what the court has done, if you read all these cases, and I find it interesting that the left attacks these cases without even reading them, I'm sure, because all their arguments make no sense. Because if you actually read these cases, you know, they're more about something, the underlying philosophy that the court is using to decide cases, the underlying philosophy of government. And so they are actually restoring our constitutional framework to the way we're supposed to govern our nation. And they're saying, you know, judges that are appointed for life are not supposed to be making public policy in this country. We're only supposed to take the law, whether it be a statute or the Constitution, as we receive it. And whatever those words say, the plain meaning of those words, that's what we apply to resolve a dispute or a case or a controversy. And so what the court is doing is they're saying we're actually giving up some of our power here, and we're giving it back to the state legislatures, for example, in the Roe v. Wade case. And we're saying you are the appropriate part of the United States government, you, the state government, because that power doesn't rest with the Supreme Court. And therefore, you states, if you want to have abortion, put it in your laws. If you don't want to have abortion, you want to protect life in the womb, put that in your law. And so, but don't tell us, don't ask us, an unelected body of just a few people to decide the public policy of the country. And what that does, Steve, is that's restoring the constitutional framework.
Correct.
That our founders envisioned, where, you know, people that are accountable to the people, in other words, legislatures, they are the ones that should be making the public policy, not the court. And so if you read all these cases together, it's really much more than just the specific issues they're deciding. It's
I want to go right down that road.
Part of the government should be the one that makes the decision.
I want to continue down that road because there is this. The Dobbs case itself, 6-3 was the ruling, right? To uphold the Mississippi law, 6-3, including John Roberts. But then the court went farther. They weren't asked to overturn Roe v. Wade, were they? But because that question popped up, they decided to take that on as well. Am I correct?
Partially. And what happens is, in a Supreme Court case, there's two phases. There's the petition phase, and then there's the merits, where they decide the merits of the case. In the petition phase, we were one of the only – Great Lakes Justice Center, one of the only lawyers that said, hey, the court's ready to do this. And so we filed a brief, you know, in support of the petitioners asking the court to take this case. And when they did, the court then certifies a question that they're going to decide. For the first time in my lifetime, they certified a question in a way that suggested they were going to overturn. They were going to at least decide whether or not they should overturn Roe. They were going to decide whether or not Roe was properly decided. And what happened in the decision, Steve, is it was a 6-3 decision with regard to who should win. But the actual rule of law, there was a 5-1-3 decision. And so five justices agreed on why the law should be upheld that protected life and why Roe should be overturned. The reason it should be overturned is it was never in the Constitution in the first place. And then one justice, Justice Roberts, said, well, I agree with who should win here. I agree that the law should be upheld, that we should protect life in the womb in this case. But I'm not so ready. I want to do it more incrementally. I think we should move slower in before we overturn.
All right. So that brings me to my next series of questions. We're going to hold you through the break on this one because the professor is going to have to work this out for the students, that being you and I. There are several cases, six, that have not yet been handed down. One of those, and to me, Professor, my witnessing of the Supreme Court has been they always hold the biggest cases for last. At least it's not always true, but it kind of holds true oftentimes. There's one case here of these six that I believe is bigger than Roe v. Wade, which a lot of people are, how is that possible? Because it could change everything about American government and put it back to the Constitution. And that's West Virginia versus the EPA. Because what it could do is overturn what is known as the Chevron Doctrine. It could push out all of this regulation nation that we've been dealing with since the 1930s when we left the constitutional framework and started creating agencies like the EPA that have authority to create rules, which are laws, that have the ability to take away people's their resources, their money, their businesses, put them in jail. And it's not just the EPA, it's all these government agencies. This could render most of contemporary government unconstitutional if they decide to take that leap, which would be much bigger than Roe v. Wade, wouldn't it, Professor?
It certainly would have as bigger an impact on the day-to-day lives of virtually every American. And it is a decision just like these other ones that are well overdue to be made with regard to whether or not we restructure our government back to its constitutional principles and we return to constitutional principles where we have, you know, people that are actually accountable for their policy decisions, making the decisions. You know, and we'll talk about this maybe in the next segment, but the EPA, nobody elects an EPA.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, the EPA was created by an executive order. Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency with an executive order, and it now has more power in many regards than Congress itself. And so we could see a situation where the U.S. government cedes its power back to the states, as we saw in Roe v. Wade. But we could also see, potentially, here in this West Virginia versus EPA, those agencies having their power stripped and returned to Congress where it actually belongs, in my opinion. Professor, hold that thought, and because I'm going to ask you some questions about this, dating back to the New Deal and how we got to a place where all these regulations are in place. And the EPA, its agents carry guns. And OSHA, its people carry badges and guns, for God's sake. And all of these agencies, right? So hold that thought. Professor William Weiner here with me. I think it's possible we could see a case come down because if the Supreme Court's wanting to go farther than it needs to in Roe v. Wade, it clearly can go a lot farther than West Virginia versus EPA in this one case and say, well, the whole regulation nation is in violation of our Constitution. Hold right there. We'll be back on the Steve Gerber Show.
While the selection is at its best, is ticking away.
Celebrate your 4th of July with a bang at Sparky's Fireworks Outlet.
3731 Ann Arbor Road, just a half a mile east of the East Michigan Avenue Mile.
Get the biggest boom for your buck at Sparky's Fireworks Outlet.
Save even more with a Sparky Bundle.
Don't let your 4th of July fizzle. Get to Sparky's Fireworks Outlet early and save big before it's too late.
In the Den with Dan Dickerson.
Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use the code HUGE for a special offer when you sign up. That's code HUGE for a special offer when you sign up. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Justin Verlander shut down the Yankees on four hits on Friday night, allowed one run, lowered his ERA to 2.28 while picking up his ninth win. No one's really surprised Verlander's defying the odds to make a comeback at 39 after missing 2 years to Tommy John surgery, but that doesn't make what he's doing any less remarkable. JV has gone at least 6 innings in all but 3 starts, 7 or 8 innings in half of his starts. He's allowed more than 3 earned runs twice. Opponents are hitting 190 with no power. Verlander's average fastball velocity is exactly where it was before surgery at 95, and all 4 pitches remain plus offerings. Verlander has said he'd like to pitch until he's 45. Heck, with a rebuilt arm, now it might be closer to 50.
The Michigan Chamber of Commerce.
Michigan has been through some tough times. We've seen businesses close, unemployment soar, and the economy take a heavy hit. But through these struggles, we've been given the opportunity to rethink, retool, and reimagine. It's through strength and determination, drive and focus, that we will be back, and we will bring Michigan back. We are the Michigan Chamber, and we stand ready to fight for Michigan.
To learn more about the Michigan Chamber and how to become a member, visit michamber.com.